Africa News tonight, coming up right after these latest.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I'm not convinced that this is something that, you know, that these positions will remain common in the next 2 months. I think there's very high potential for these guys to fall out again.
That's Congo analyst Stephen Walters speaking about an agreement announced today on the DRC's upcoming election. Details coming up.
Also, UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling on the Angolan government to halt the mass expulsions of Congolese migrants. And Kenya Airways will make its inaugural direct flight to the U.S. on Sunday.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The fractured opposition in the DRC faces a number of internal disagreements just 2 months ahead of a pivotal poll that will see the nation elect a new president for the first time in 17 years. Opposition leaders met in South Africa's capital this week to try to reach agreement on the major issues and to narrow down which man will lead their fight for the presidency. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
After 2 days of discussions, Congo's seven top opposition leaders agreed on two critical issues, according to a document sent electronically to VOA by one of the leaders on Friday. They agreed to participate in the poll set for December 23rd, despite reiterating concerns over a lack of political space and their mistrust in an electronic voting system that they believe is flawed or may be misused. And they agreed that by November 15th, they will name a unified opposition candidate to challenge ruling coalition candidate Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary. But, says longtime Congo analyst Stephanie Walters, the situation remains complicated and fragile.
I'm not convinced that this is something that, you know, that these positions will remain common in the next 2 months. I think there's very high potential for these guys to fall out again. But for the moment, there is consensus that the opposition is going ahead with the elections and will just continue to try and push for greater credibility.
The main schism, she says, is over who will be the presidential candidate. The Electoral Commission has declared three opposition leaders ineligible for various and contested reasons. Walters says the opposition field is effectively narrowed to two men, longtime politician Vital Kamerhe and relative newcomer Felix Tshisekedi, whose late father led the nation's main opposition party for decades. Government spokesman Lambert Mende dismissed opposition allegations that the political playing field is uneven and that the poll may not be transparent.
But why say that it will not be transparent? Are they God or what to know what will happen? Let it happen and let them go to court to challenge.
Mende says he's confident about the poll, which for the first time is entirely locally funded after the government rejected foreign funding, accusing the international community of trying to influence the poll. But Walter says she's watching closely how things will play out, if the poll happens at all.
If this election takes place, there will be incidents. And if the ruling party candidate wins, there will certainly be incidents because people already don't believe in the credibility of this process. They're not comfortable with the situation. They're still as opposed to the Kabila elite being in charge as they were when Kabila was indicating he might stay on.
The election was delayed for 2 years as President Joseph Kabila refused to step down at the end of his term in December 2016. Now Kabila has endorsed Shadary, and this critical vote is only 58 days away. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Ugandan health officials have established an isolation center to temporarily serve all the district bordering Democratic Republic of the Congo following a persistent Ebola outbreak in the country. The center has been set up at Kasonga landing site because of the frequent cross-border movements involving traders and communities traveling between eastern DRC and Uganda. It is one of the many preventative measures Uganda is taking to keep hemorrhagic fever out of the country. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda's Ministry of Health and other partners have created a task force to implement Ebola preparedness and readiness efforts and to help curb the spread of the epidemic from the Democratic Republic of Congo. At least about 2,000 people are screened daily at the different entry points bordering Uganda and the DRC. This number doubles during market days as traders and refugees cross the borders between the two countries. Ithungu Honorata is the officer in charge of Mpondwe Border Screening Point.
When we receive travelers from Congo, we make them wash hands. After washing hands, they move and go and dip the feet, the sole of the feet, in the basin with cheek chlorine. So from there, then they go in the line and we take their temperature. On a daily basis, we see over 7,000 travelers.
Districts experiencing an influx of Congolese refugees have installed walk-through screens provided by the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
Refugees enter at certain points. All those areas have walk-through screens. There are districts that do not have well-defined portals of entry, that this is an entry point, but they have porous borders. So those ones that do not have well-defined walk-through points, we don't know where to place the portals. So what we have done is trained the district people and put them on alert so that any report of anything that is out of the normal is picked up immediately, and we have it tested.
At least 25 Ugandan districts bordering the DRC are considered to be at a high Ebola risk due to their proximity to the Congolese provinces of North Kivu and Ituri, where close to 200 cases of Ebola have been confirmed with nearly 130 deaths. Teams have been set up to handle a number of issues, which include managing border surveillance. The team is also expected to be vigilant and report any suspicious cases for investigation. John Stephen Ekom is the resident district commissioner of Hoima District, where most of the landing sites are situated.
80 health workers have been trained on Ebola case management, and we have opened an isolation unit of Ebola at Kasonga. These are mechanisms that we have put as a district, and we are calling upon the general public to cooperate with the surveillance teams.
Ekom, who is also in charge of security in the area, says Ugandan army officers have been deployed to work hand-in-hand with trained health officials to ensure that all those entering Uganda from the DRC are thoroughly screened.
We have deployed security personnel who have been directed to work closely with these health workers that have been trained to ensure that the people who cross from DRC Congo are screened. I'm also directing the security personnel in the landing sites to ensure that whoever fails to comply should be arrested.
The deadly Ebola virus is transmitted through blood and the secretions of bodily fluids, including from infected animals such as chimpanzees, gorillas, fruit bats, monkeys, forest antelope, and porcupines. Ebola is a deadly illness with a fatality rate of up to 90%, according to WHO. According to WHO, the risk of Ebola spreading from the DRC to other countries is now very high due to ongoing violence from militia groups, as well as the outbreak's proximity to the neighboring countries of Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan. Uganda has had 5 Ebola outbreaks since 2000, the latest being in 2017. This is Catherine Nambi for VON News in Kampala.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling on the Angolan government to halt the mass expulsions of Congolese migrants. She warns this could trigger renewal of inter-ethnic violence in the DRC's Kasai province. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since the beginning of October, Angola has forced an estimated 330,000 Congolese migrants across the border into Kasai, Kasai Central, and Kwango provinces of the DR Congo. The UN Human Rights Office says the mass expulsions have involved excessive force and serious violations of human rights by both Angolan and DRC security forces. The UN confirms 6 deaths and says it has unverified reports of other killings, as well as at least 100 people injured. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says DRC security forces allegedly have subjected migrants to extortion and illegal taxation upon arrival in the town of Kamako. Shamdasani says High Commissioner Michelle Bachelet is worried the volatile Kasai region could blow up again if DRC authorities do not protect the returning migrants from exploitation and violence by security forces and others.
Given the continued presence of armed groups that are split along ethnic lines in the Kasais, we are warning of the risk of intercommunal violence if the situation is not handled carefully by the authorities. Failing this, we fear that we could see a repeat of the cycles of terrible violence that erupted in the Kasais in 2016.
Shamdasani tells VOA there has been no accountability for grave human rights violations that took place in Kasai in 2016 and 2017.
You know, there were mass killings, massive sexual violence, burning of people's homes, a lot of people displaced, a lot of refugees who fled to neighboring countries as a result of that violence.
The Congolese migrants had been working as informal diamond miners in northeast Angola. Angola's government has cracked down on the miners to reduce diamond smuggling and raise more money for its state coffers. Angolan authorities have previously denied allegations of mass expulsions and brutality, insisting the migrants have returned home voluntarily. High Commissioner Bachelet is urging an investigation with a view to ensuring justice for the victims. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya Airways will make its inaugural direct flight to the United States Sunday after airline management got a court injunction ordering employees to suspend plans for a strike. The union had threatened to strike because it said airline management had not agreed to a new contract for crew members on the longer flights. The union said crews need additional pay and there should be more staff on the flights to give them adequate rest. The airline sees the direct flight to New York as key to expanding access to the U.S. market. It is seen as part of Kenya's drive to expand tourism and business links with American companies.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehisu Heap, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The fractured opposition in the DRC faces a number of internal disagreements ahead of a pivotal poll in 2 months. Kenya Airways will make its inaugural direct flight to the United States on Sunday. And UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is calling on the Angolan government to halt the mass expulsions of Congolese migrants. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The Rwanda cabinet has resolved to strengthen the use of French in education, training, and business. Some political analysts see it as a goodwill gesture to France to express hopes of improving relations and to thank French President Emmanuel Macron for backing Rwanda's Louis Mishikiwabo to head the Organisation Internationale de la Francophone. As Eugene Uimana reports from Kigali, the French-speaking community greatly welcomes this decision.
The decision to increase use of the French language was announced at the cabinet meeting chaired by President Paul Kagame on Wednesday. For Christophe Kayumba, a political analyst and lecturer at the University of Rwanda, it's a card played by Rwandan politicians to show France their desire to improve relations that were tarnished by the 1994 genocide.
I perceive it to be a goodwill gesture to France, particularly to the government of President Macron, that Rwanda is willing to work with France, is willing to repair relations, and is grateful for the French support for Honorable Mishikiwabo as the new SG to the Francophonie.
Johnson Busingye, the Minister of Justice and the Attorney General, did not clearly explain the measures aimed at bolstering the French language. For the cabinet to take this decision is to remind all Rwandans the importance and the position of French and the way this language has to be used in our country. Kayumba says the move has more practical meaning than anything. He says if the government wants to really promote the French, it will make it a language of instruction as it used to be.
Because if government had wanted to give French a driving seat, it would have changed that policy. So because that has not changed, I don't think the idea of strengthening will substantively change anything.
Still, French-speaking Rwandans are happy. They say the move will return value. Niyo Dushima Dieudonne and Jean-Baptiste Nkurunziza are among them.
To speak French in this country, it was like nothing important. And also the French speakers was like incompetent. But nowadays, I think the value of French is going to come back in this country.
This decision gives back dignity to any Rwandan who speaks French. If you look in different services, in banks, hospitals, and in the government institutions, most of the service documents were to be completed in English. You could rarely find a way to use the French while demanding services. French has been an official language in Rwanda since independence from Belgium in 1962. This language lost that legacy when the Rwanda Patriotic Front, now the ruling party, overthrew Habyarimana's regime. In 2008, the government shifted from French to English as the language of instruction. Now Rwanda's official languages are Kinyarwanda, English, French, and Kiswahili. Apart from Kiswahili, which was adopted recently, the national constitution and other laws are printed in the other three languages. The government pledges equal treatment for any of these language speakers. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
U.S. Federal Appeals Court reinstated this week a lawsuit by the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit legal advocacy group International Rights Advocates. The organization initially filed a lawsuit in 2005 on behalf of a group of former African child slaves against the U.S. unit of Nestle S.A., the world's largest food maker and Cargill company. They allege the companies perpetuated child slavery on cocoa farms in Ivory Coast. A U.S. Court of Appeals in California said in a unanimous decision that the group could proceed with its claims despite the fact that the alleged abuses occurred outside of the U.S. Terry Collinsworth is the executive director of International Rights Advocates and one of the plaintiff attorneys representing the former child slaves. He spoke with me about the significance of the reinstatement of the lawsuit.
The decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that reinstated our case is extremely significant because of the technical aspects of the alien tort statute that the case is based on. If you fund your activities from the United States, if you make decisions that cause harm to people in other countries in the United States, that aids and abets the crime and that you can be held responsible for it in courts. And in this case, it means that because we alleged and think we can prove that Cargill and Nestle made the decisions here in the United States, they marketed from the United States, they purchased from the United States the cocoa beans from Cote d'Ivoire that were made through harvesting practices using child slaves, that they can be responsible for that.
Who are the plaintiffs? How many are there? And what are they exactly alleging?
We have six plaintiffs who are all now young men, but were at the time we filed the case back in 2005, they were children who had been trafficked from Mali to Cote d'Ivoire to work on cocoa plantations. They were severely abused, all six of them. They were kept prisoner. They were punished if they tried to get away. They were beaten. Two of them were severely injured when they tried to escape. They ultimately did escape and return to their villages in Mali, where I met them. And they are serving as class representatives for the thousands of children who have been trafficked from Mali to work in the cocoa plantations of Cote d'Ivoire.
The defendants admit there was child abuse taking place on their cocoa farms in Ivory Coast. However, they're saying that they are not responsible because it was in Ivory Coast.
Cargill and Nestle do not and cannot deny that there is child slavery in their supply chains in Cote d'Ivoire. In fact, in 2001, going back 17 years, they signed a voluntary agreement to head off legislation in Congress to prohibit the importation of cocoa that is harvested by children. Last July, July 2018, they still hadn't complied, and they, in fact, just unilaterally got rid of their new deadline that they had set for 2020. So they admit all the time that there's child labor in their supply chain. They've tried a series of technical defenses, including what I think is the most just outrageous. They argued initially that there is child slavery in our supply chain, but we did not intend specifically to enslave children, so we can't be liable. So they were basically saying, we, the corporations, didn't round up the children. Somebody else did that, so we can't be liable. And the court rejected that in our last appeal back in 2014.
So what is the next step? So
we filed this case in federal court in Los Angeles. That is where the trial court sits. Based on the ruling we just received on October 23rd from the Court of Appeals, the case will go back to that court where we'll have some other procedural issues to deal with, but hopefully we will begin preparing for trial. Now, with that said, the companies do have the right to seek further review. They can appeal to the Supreme Court.
What impact will this case have on the international playing field?
Lots of people are watching this case and this situation because this is one of the last vestiges of a direct abuse of children in supply chains left. To have in Cote d'Ivoire some of the largest corporations in the world, including Nestle, still getting away with enslaving children for profit is a horrendous example of the brutality of the global economy. And people around the world are watching to see if our legal system is adequate to address this and hold Nestle and Cargill responsible.
Terry Collingsworth is the Executive Director of International Rights Advocates based here in Washington, D.C.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.